know my kingdom awaits, and they've forgiven my mistakes.
I'm coming home, I'm coming home.
Tell the world that I'm coming.
I'm back where I belong. I never felt so strong, yeah.
Feeling like there's nothing that I can't try.
And if you're with me, put your hands high, 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 high. Hey. And if you're with me, put your hands high.
Bring our troops home. Our brothers and sisters have been gone too long. Why do we make a war zone in someone's home?
I need some folks that listen to my hurt. The ones who value me and know my worth.
A faith that feels the call to heal the earth.
Ask you what breaks your heart. Be the change you want to start.
We come from all traditions, ethnic groups and generations, gay and straight of all persuasions. What unites us is desire to listen. Open our hearts in every situation. Serve the world with all the gifts we're given.
So if you're in it, put your hands high.
Hands high.
So let's begin it, put your hands
I'm
high.
I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming home.
Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday.
I know my kingdom awaits. They've forgiven my mistakes.
I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world that I'm coming home.
Hey kids, come on along. We'll share a story and a song. So listen with your heart and for too long. You might have questions and you know there isn't one that's wrong.
Why does my friend say Johnny's weird? Because she has two moms.
How come I have to have an iPod to belong?
You know what Betsy said is true, she's right and I am wrong.
And now my boyfriend says he's gone if we don't get it on.
I need to talk about these things so I can go back strong.
Bring it on.
You know we're here to help you grow, to hear that voice inside you that you'll come to know. So if you're in it, put your hands high.
So let's begin and put your hands high.
Yeah.
I'm coming home, coming home. Tell the world that I'm coming home. Let the rain wash away.
Your home, back where you belong, back where you feel strong. That's what makes our faith community, comforting each one at times of need, unsettling our apathy and greed. Inspired by our goals like Susan B, be one, there'll be a bit of heresy. Yeah! So if you're in it, put your hands high. So let's begin it, join your hands high. Yeah! Whatever we do or dream, begin it. Boldness is genius and power and magic in it. Let us be bold in our living and our loving. Put your hands high.
It's good to be home.
Good morning. Well, today we'll call Potpourri Day up here. I'm going to share three things with you. First is that my brother asked for a short history of standing on the side of love because it is a social media campaign that's gone pretty well for Unitarian Universalism. So I'll take you backstage a little bit on that. And then I want to talk a little, I'm going to show a video homily from our worship service just to show you what that looks like and have you experience it, and also so that you know how you might use those in your congregation. And then a couple of practical tips and suggestions. I was going to have people turn to each other and say what they're taking home, and my brother snorted and said, I hate that. So, this is a parting gift to Will. And those of you who love that, find him and smack him at lunch. So, standing on the side of love, the campaign started after shootings, you'll recall, in Knoxville, Tennessee, where a killer who listened to a lot of right-wing radio opened fire on the UU congregation. Cliff, you want to just stick that headline up from that Knoxville shooting just to take us all back there? Oops. Cliff is so good. You know, I had technical difficulties this morning. He got these literally sitting in worship. So let's just give the guy in tie-dye a little hand here. Anyway, so this guy who listened to a lot of right-wing radio went in and opened fire on a UU congregation in Knoxville while the teenagers were performing Annie. And then UUA president Bill Sinkford went down to Knoxville and came back changed from being there. And one thing he said was that the ad campaign we'd been working on at the time at the UUA, which was Time magazine ads that were provocative and super expensive, that perhaps that wasn't the best way to go. Now, I'd been saying that quietly on the sides for a long time, and, you know, you see opportunity when it knocks. So I leaped up and said that I thought it was time that we think about an ad campaign that was on our values rather than kind of advertising us. I also, at the time, was the founding board chair of a group called Faith in Public Life, an interfaith group that started up after 2004 election. And what I saw was that five people on the staff there were managing to get media and to move things in a way that the whole UUA staff wasn't. And so I thought to myself, we're not doing this quite right. We're doing it in yesterday's way. For instance, after the shooting, and you could show the New York Times ad, the UUA raised and spent $130,000 to put an ad in the New York Times, which was a beautiful ad. And it said, basically, we're going to keep our doors open. And we get to see how he does it. Anyway, it said, basically, we're going to keep our doors open, and we stand for justice, and, you know, no killer's going to stop us. And it was a great ad. But what I saw was that Faith in Public Life would have taken that same ad and that money, and they would have leveraged some action that came back from it. They wouldn't have just put out an ad and then said, isn't that great, we put out an ad. They would have actually started some kind of, if you agree, get back to us. If you want to be part of this movement for love, stand with us. They would have done something interactive and otherwise. So I had no say on that. But I was disappointed that we didn't use it as an advertising camp, as a platform for advocacy. So that's the ad. It was a beautiful ad. It's a very nice ad. And so I did what we do in meetings when we have a better idea, and that is that I suggested it. And then who can guess what happens in a meeting when you have a good idea and you suggest it? Congratulations. Congratulations. That's right. You're now in charge of it. So I had really pretty much no idea how to do what I wanted to do. So I asked this guy named Fred Garcia, who'd been consulting with UUA for a long time, doing wonderful pro bono work on public witness. I asked him if he would come up with a strategic plan to get out into the world with our values. And he came up with an outline for a Standing on the Side of Love campaign. We'd already been using this slogan for marriage equality. I see some people with the old blue shirts. Those were done out of the Washington office. You know, we just made them up. And we would show up, though, in large numbers at marriage equality events. And we noticed that when you all wear the same T-shirt, it's a very powerful presence. Like, just a simple act of putting on the same T-shirt. So Fred came up with a three-point plan for how we could use Standing on the Side of Love to move out, to harness love's power to stop oppression, based not only on sexual orientation and gender identity, but also on any form of oppression that's based on identities. So he had three parts of this. One was to train a whole lot of clergy to do good media work, which he did himself, and he does it fantastically well. Two was to hire a PR firm to get that media out into the news, so we got a lot of earned media. And three was to hire a social media firm to help us create a good website and an electronic presence. So I was now the campaign director, of course, and so I did this incredibly smart thing, which I commend to you, and that is that I looked around and I found a crackerjack 27-year-old to bring in to be the campaign manager, and that was Adam Gerhardstein. So he came in on March 1st, And he started to manage the day-to-day operations. And here's where I think it's most relevant to you. My main job, besides supporting Adam and talking through what he was doing, was to clear the space within an institution that was resistant to change. Anybody else think maybe you need to appoint someone in that role specifically? Because, and you need somebody with a lot of social capital and seniority to do it, because institutions resist change. That's just what they do. That's not a good or bad thing. It's simply true. So you have to have somebody who's willing to take the hits, who's willing to be insulted and can keep going. And you will be, trust me on this. You'll be hurt, you'll be offended, people will question your ability, all kinds of things will happen. But you set a goal that's beyond it and you keep going forward. And so we started this game of, you know, kind of like Jane McGonigal says, games build resilience. We hadn't seen her video yet. But we knew that if we looked at obstacles as things to get around rather than things to stop us, it just made life more interesting. So I commend that tactic to you. It was a good one. So we went to GA, and I'm going to have Cliff show a video of that first GA. And a couple things that you'll see. We didn't have any workshop space. We didn't start this until way after the GA planning committee had set up all the time. And so this is back GA in Salt Lake City. There's a presidential race for the UUA going on. We have no time in the plenary, no time for workshops. So how are we going to be visible? So you'll see what Adam did.
So I couldn't be happier that we've launched the Standing on the Side of Love campaign, because it comes about as close as anything I've ever imagined to the center of what I have been trying to do, what we have been trying to do, and really the center of Unitarian Universalism.
After the shooting, a very conservative Presbyterian church came into our church and offered to feed us for a week, and they set up a table and they provided lunch there, and there was a lot of love and concern, and they were serving people who were obviously gay and obviously transgender, and yet the connection and the love and the compassion was real. I know that the struggle for justice will mean a lot of polarization, it'll mean a lot of conflict, but I have a vision from that day, of a day when we will all be standing on the side of love.
Love heals. Love reconciles. Love helps us move when we're stuck. Love helps us cast out all fear.
But I saw so much abuse of other people who tried to move into the U.S. that had good hearts, that wanted to work, that wanted to make it a better society. And I want to fight against that abuse and give everyone the chance that I had to move here. So thank you.
We are standing on the side of love.
Being married to my partner of 10 years, I did not expect it was going to make a difference. But the contentment in our home and the security of our relationship has just changed enormously. That's what love means to me.
We are standing on the side of love!
I have African-American teenage grandchildren, three boys. And with the oldest two, who are now 19, I have had the experience of being in situations where I could see people being frightened of them. And, you know, that's not the world I want to live in.
We are standing on the side of love.
Stand on the side of love, because I want to be someone that my daughter can be proud.
I will stand with you. Will you stand with me? And we will be the change that we hope to see. In the name of love, in the name of peace, will you stand? Stand with me
when pain and hatred churn up angry noise and fight to drown out our freedom song. We will rise in one joyful voice, loud and clear and ever strong.
I will stand with you. Will you stand? Hope to see in the name of love.
stand for love? What can you stand for?
And people come in and they think they've discovered Unitarian Universalism at a defining moment. But of course, the defining moment is always.
As the new president of our association, I invite you to stand with me on the side of love.
We're standing on the side of love!
In the name of love, in the name of peace, will you stand with me?
You know, Adam took iMovie and made that. People start calling me, what firm did you hire to do that film? No, I hired a really smart 27-year-old. That's what I did. And but you can see what went into that. There were all kinds of, and Adam had worked hard on a presidential campaign that fall that, and I won't name it because we're nonpartisan, but that used a lot of young adult energy to be very active. And so he had young adults roving GA with those crates, you know, saying, what can you do with this? And interviewing people with little flip cams, which is sometimes the volume isn't perfect because of that. But he just, you know, harnessed his own friends and kind of set up campaign headquarters there, met every morning, you know, and launched everybody out. And then they came back and told stories. So there was just a whole lot of energy. As you might guess, we had to have both presidential candidates do that ending piece that Peter Morales did, because we didn't know who'd be elected, and we waited to issue it in the name of the new president. But most of it is pieces that you could also use, especially you up there in the balcony. I see you. You know how to do this, don't you? Yeah. So there's so much creativity that comes in when you let a lot of people participate. There's so much more creativity that comes in. So we made a ton of mistakes with Standing on the Side of Love. It turned out that training a lot of ministers, which cost a whole lot of money, turned out training wasn't the biggest issue for ministers. What did the ministers in the room think it was? Time. Colin knew that. Yeah, we didn't. So we trained them, and they were well trained, but they still didn't have any more time in the day with their training. Although that training continues to spiral it out. I see it all the time. I talk to people who say, you know, that was the most important training I ever did, and I'm using it 5 years later this way. We also found that paying the media firm this huge retainer was a total waste of time because there weren't any stories, and there certainly weren't any national stories. So what happened over time is that Adam and I started trusting our own instincts more than Fred Garcia, the smart media consultant who made up a plan. And, you know, so, you know, kind of piece by piece, we'd throw it overboard. And the piece that really defined it was around Valentine's Day in 2009. We still had the media consultants and the social media consultants, and they all said to Adam and I that we were completely wrong about what we wanted to do on Valentine's Day. And that was that we wanted to just say to congregations across the country, redefine love the way that you want to in your community. And everyone was saying, no, you have to say, talk about immigration or talk about GLBT equality or, you know, give them something more structured. And Adam and I said, you don't know our people. No. They're much more likely to do something if we just say, stand on the side of love, what does that mean to you? And so, in effect, we disobeyed, we let them go, we trusted our own instincts and our own knowledge, which is the key to all of this. It trust your instincts. And so 100 congregations did stuff, and they created a lot of local news. You know, and each of them could say, we'd give them talking points, this is part of a national campaign to stand on the side of love. But then they could take that where it mattered in their local communities. Now, I'll admit that tending to feral kittens wasn't really what we had in mind with the campaign. But if that's what a particular congregation wanted to do, that would be what they'd do. And we didn't spend any energy trying to stop people from doing things like that. In my opinion, that's when the campaign really took off. So Adam and I both left 2 years ago. Happily for me, he came to law school in Minneapolis, so I still get to see him a whole lot. Dan Furmansky came on. Can you show the Facebook page? Because this is, I tell Dan all the time, I'm just in awe. They're up to almost 30,000 Facebook friends. And they use the Facebook page way more than use their website. If I looked at, I did look at their website getting ready for this, and it looked a lot like stuff that we put together a few years ago. But where all the action is in social media. So they're likely, like right now, they're advertising that this afternoon there's a conference call you can get on to learn about how to stop, you know, tell your local law enforcement to stop cooperating with ICE. So they'll launch campaigns through that rather than really putting them onto the website. The website is more, you know, static resources that you don't have to change. And everything that's moving comes onto Facebook. One of the tips that I mentioned in one of our follow-ups is that one thing we did is whenever we posted, we always posted in such a way that people could click like. So even if we posted there's been a horrible hate crime, then we would say, we are praying for the families, please join us in supporting the families of the survivors, so that people could click like. Because we didn't want to be sending stuff out that people would respond, and you see this, I wish there was a hate button. You know, we just didn't want to be creating more energy like that. So no matter how painful of a story we were putting out, we would always put some forward movement that you could actually like. And that's, I think that's a good Facebook strategy in general for all churches at all times, to move things out in really positive ways so that people feel positive. The moment that I knew Standing on the Side of Love was a success was long after I was gone. It's that photo that I sent you. This was on the front page of the New York Times. And it's the longest URL in the world, but I swear it's the right one. When I saw that this was on the front page of the New York Times, I immediately texted Bill Sinkford, Adam, and I know, that's the URL for this, but it really is right. So this picture was on the front page of the New York Times. It was a Reuters picture. It's a woman named Mar Cardenas from San Diego getting arrested when they started to put 1070 into effect in Arizona. And that love image was all over those arrests. Anybody here there for those? Colin, you were there. Yeah, I mean, that image was just ubiquitous. And I noticed at Tent City this year that this message, I'm not saying it changed Joe Arpaio's heart, but it did stop him a little bit. Because he, you know, to say, you know, you're unfair, you're a racist, all these other things, true enough, but he doesn't really care. But to stand there and say, we stand on the side of love, it really did seem to give him a little bit of pause, because what he came back with is, this is a very well-run place. And, you know, given that he'd already called it a concentration camp, I thought saying you have a well-run concentration camp isn't really opposing this message at all. So anyway, that's kind of the backstory and some of Standing on the Side of Love. I commend to you, if you don't have a lot going on in social justice in your congregation, to use their stuff, put it on your website, let it come through. They've designed it in ways for you to pick it up and carry it. It's very user-friendly. Call Dan Furmansky or email him if you want some help. But it's absolutely there for all congregations to stand with. And, you know, I continue to think it's our message in our time. So that's what I got to say about that one. So I did want to show a video homily, because it's another thing that you could use. You could use these for covenant groups. We have dozens of them now up on the web in YouTube. You could use them for covenant groups. People could do covenant groups online. You know, young parents could not have to come to church. They could actually come to a Google Plus Hangout and watch a video and talk about it or something. So is the Mockingbird staff here? Okay. They haven't cried lately, so I picked one to make them cry. Because our theme this month is joy, it's only fitting that this one would make you cry. This is just the worship, the homily that we did last week. It's my intern, and I use the term very loosely, Joanna Fontaine Crawford, and she's telling a story that involves her child's cancer, and I'll give you a spoiler, that her child is healthy now. Healthy child. Okay. I would not show this otherwise, because, yeah. Okay, so, that's a different one. Oh, that's, well, while it's up, you want to just leave that for a second? This is just this new website I saw yesterday on Facebook that I thought is just beta tested right now, but it's this wonderful guy, David Owen O'Quill, that's him that you see, and it's Resources for Unitarian Universalist Evangelism. I have a feeling this is going to be a great place to go in the future, so you can join that. But meanwhile, Cliff is going to put all of these links up on the website when the talks are up there, so that if there's a particular thing you want, you'll be able to find it. It is the one that I emailed you separately, not in that list. The first thing you got. That's the one.
I've been remembering my 39th birthday recently. It was a great birthday, and it's one of those memories that I know I'll have my whole life. My family, my husband and me and our four children, had a slumber party that night. Now, my birthday is not just my birthday, it's also my husband's birthday. I was turning 39 and he was turning 40. And we just had a ball. I think we, had special food brought in. My husband's sister had delivered to us 24 assorted cupcakes, just every flavor you could think of. We had streamers up and music, and we watched movies. My husband gave me a new guitar, so I played and we sang songs till all hours. And just had a blast. And then the nurse came in and gave my youngest daughter her chemo for the night. Joy comes sometimes in unexpected times and unexpected places. When my daughter had her second bout of cancer, she was 3 years old, and there was nothing that I could do. We had no control. It was all up to those around us. I'm not a doctor. We went where we were supposed to go, when we were told to go there. She took the medicines she was told to take. And it was 6 months in and out of the hospital, going about every couple of weeks. I knew I didn't have any control over the final outcome. So I thought about what I did have control about. Okay. I had control about fun. And so I decided that my job was to be the doctor of fun. And so whenever we would check in to the hospital, we brought just a cart, literally a giant rolling cart full of stuff with us. We had posters to put up on the wall. We had movies to watch. We usually took a big thing of fresh cupcakes, which made us some of the most popular people on the floor, as you can imagine. And we had a ball. I mean, we really did. I know I'm talking about my daughter having cancer, and that part wasn't fun. There were a whole lot of nights where, after she fell asleep, I cried myself to sleep. But we also had a heck of a lot of fun during the time. One of my daughter's favorite things are tea parties. And so we would take in our little tea set and, you know, pour out our little make-believe tea and have little snacks with it and sit on the floor of her hospital room on a blanket and have these marvelous tea parties with dolls and stuffed animals and the occasional nurse that we, or doctor, who we could convince to join us. That was a lot of fun. Her last day of chemo happened to be Halloween. And so, since we knew we were going to be in the hospital for all the days leading up to Halloween, we took a whole bunch of costumes. She being the youngest, we have, costumes out the wazoo. So about three times a day, she'd change into a different costume. And, you know, if you're bald, I have to say, it opens up a lot of possibilities. Makes wigs a lot easier, too. I'm kind of crying. Well, I am crying as I'm recording this, as these memories are coming flooding back to me. I mean, I don't mean to make light of this situation. My 3-year-old daughter had cancer, her second bout of it. There was a lot of hard stuff in that. Part of what surrounded all of this was the knowledge that we really don't know what the happy times are until afterwards. Going through all of this, it was hard. It was. But I knew that depending on what the final outcome would be, I would look back on this in different ways. See, I'm really lucky because I get to look back on that time as being a really hard time because she survived. And so in comparison, those were the rough times. But I know, and I knew even then, that if the story were different, that I would look back on those days as being the happiest and the most precious days. So I tried not to waste any of them. You know, it's fitting that it's raining outside, and it's fitting that I'm crying while I'm talking to you about joy, because so often joy comes to us not in the days of sunshine, not in the days where everything's going great, but in some of those hard times. As the poet says, joy and woe are woven together fine. There are two songs that really stick out in my mind from this time. We listened to a lot of music. It seems like there was always either a movie playing or music playing in our room. And one was a Willie Nelson song. It's not one of his most popular. You might not know it. It's called Good Times. And in the song he says, I'm not cold and I'm not wet and I'm not hungry. So classify these as good times. And I played that song a lot because, you know, we were having fun and we could classify those as good times. The other song that, oh, we would sing to her as a lullaby was actually the song that we here at the CLF open up all of our services with. It was put together by Lynn Unger using the words of the poet Rumi, come, come, whoever you are. We would sing that song to her and to ourselves because of that line, ours is no caravan of despair. We didn't want to be on a caravan of despair. We wanted to weave joy into everything that we were doing. So, a year after that birthday, my daughter was off of chemo, everything was going well, and we had to go into the hospital just for some routine stuff. It was summer, so I had all my kids with me. We did the appointment, and afterwards we were sitting in this little part of the hospital, eating granola bars before our trip home. And my oldest daughter started reminiscing about our time from the year earlier. She started talking about, oh, remember those times when we would spend the night and we'd watch movies and in the morning Dad would take us and we'd go across the street to Starbucks and get coffee for y'all. And they all started sharing their stories from that time, including my littlest one. And then my older daughter said, you know, We even made cancer fun. Joy comes to us on some strange days and in some strange ways. Try to grab it any way you can.
So that's what we're doing online. We're finding worship. And when you'd watch that, you're all, yeah, I am too, but yeah. So when you'd watch that at a CLF service on the side, if you want, you can also be in conversation with each other so that people can be commenting, can be connecting with each other, can be saying what's on their mind so that they're not just sitting and receiving that. They're also interacting with other people who are watching it at the same time. One of the talks that I could have given today but didn't seem right for this whole crowd is a lot of really specific and particular things about using social media. I do want to flag that there's a woman named June Harold, who I've mentioned, the AOL executive, who's in the process. She got a grant to really do some templates for congregations who want to use social media, and they're really fantastic. She's been sending them to me for feedback. And I've been emailing her back all week going, this is what everybody I'm talking to needs. How can they get it? And unfortunately, she had a family crisis, so I don't know. But watch for her name, and we'll put it up on the website. It's all kinds of things, ranging from what's the appropriate role for the minister, or appropriate roles, what are appropriate roles for lay leaders, all kinds of really specific things about how to do this. So I'm not going to go through those. So I want to close with a point of personal privilege, as they would say at GA, and that's to really thank you for being here. I have a lot of friends who are writers and artists, you probably do too, and I go to many an art opening where maybe there are four people there, or a book reading where somebody's written an amazing book and there are seven people there to hear it. So the idea that I would have your attention for this long is astonishing to me, because I know who you are. I know what you do in your lives. I know how much creativity and power you hold in your own lives and what you're doing with it. And so it's just an incredible privilege to get this kind of time with you. I already acknowledged Cliff, who's gone way beyond the call of duty. He has seen, as a friend of mine said, some of you know Myers-Briggs, the letter P is the person who, it doesn't stand for procrastinate, but it could. means that until this talk is done, I don't quite know what it's going to be. So as a friend of mine once said to me, don't let your penis get in the way. So Cliff did not let my penis get in the way of this to the point where he played the chalice game without ever getting to test it in front of us. And he has agreed to put up all of these links, which is really good for you, better than if I agreed to do it. And I want to thank my brother, Will, who came expecting to be with a lot of our family and turned out to be my whole posse. So last night at the concert, I suddenly thought maybe I had come to be his posse. But thank you. And also to the planning team here. I don't know if you guys know how incredibly lucky you are about how gracious and mellow and kind this planning committee stays. They're not even listening. They take this just for granted. Say what? Oh, yeah. Oh, you're trying to figure out who my brother is? Stand up, Will. There he is, way in the back. There you go. And if this was a landed camp, we would put my father's name on that chair, because it is the Charlie Wilson get out of the room fast chair, you know, so. So he's been holding that for the week. Yeah, so the planning committee, I mean, I don't know if you even know that last week's conference that was here got booted out because there were power shortages, and that there was a chance that we would be. I wouldn't have known that until someone casually mentioned it to me midweek. The planning committee has been, you know, what they say ministers should be, a non-anxious presence. They've just been phenomenal. So I really want to thank all of them and all of you who made this happen. And I think that's what I've got to say. I wanted to do a ministerial close. Okay. So Joanna said in the homily that sometimes we don't know when the joyful days are going to come. And I know that there are people here who maybe it's your first time and there have been some lonely moments or, you know, people like me who are grieving somebody who's not here, and that it's not just all total sunshine to be here. At the same time, isn't it just a wonderful thing to get to be with people who are basically making themselves happy all day? Isn't that just a great thing? So I just want to say, you know, what a blessing it is, along with finding the joy in the challenging times, to be in a place where there's just so much joy in the moment. So thank you to the kids who took me into the upside down tree and showed me that magical place. And thanks to Mary and Irv for humoring me by getting spray paint on their white hair and beard. And, you know, thanks to the fairy and thanks for the magic that's here. And Will and I were plotting last week what we'd do to come back. I was like, I think a shuttle driving would be a really fun job. Way less. So anyway, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I do not have a song to offer, but I have many, many thanks to offer. And we have a couple little things for Meg that we're going to send her away with. And we have a card, which many of you know, I got everyone who I spoke to this morning to sign it. But it's like a tiny little part of who's here, because way more than the planning committee needed to say thanks. So I will say, tweet, email, and Facebook your thanks to Meg to get your signature on the card. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. And in the Department of Anticlimax, I have these little cards, little wallet cards about CLF, a creative laboratory of faith. So please come and feel free to take one, take some back, share them.